wait a few minutes until everybody has stabilized here. Well, thank you very much to the organizers for inviting me, and I feel very honored to be the very first one here, and also a little bit scared, so please forgive my initial nervousness here. I would like to present a topic that I think hopefully fits quite well into the theme of this conference. It is something that would not have been possible without numerical experimentation and so playing around with Maple, possibly other software, was absolutely essential, as I will point out. This is joint work with John Cosgrave of Ireland. And well, let me begin with this table, following the theme of experimentation. Here are the first primes congruent to 1 mod 4 up to 100. And then we tabulate the binomial coefficients, p minus 1 over 2 choose p minus 1 over 4. And then I look at those modulo p. And the two right columns are the unique representation of p as a sum of two squares with positive a and b. And if you compare the middle and the second last column, you see that in many cases this modulus is just 2 times a. So here 1 and 2, 1 and 2, 5 and 10, 1 and 2, 5, 10, 5, 10, and so on. There are a few exceptions. And if you look at the exceptions, they tend to be exactly those where A, so here A is congruent 3 mod 4, 3 mod 4, 3 mod 4. However, if you look at this as a negative congruence, let me go one further. If we look at the smallest absolute values, then it becomes obvious what goes on here. Now you have 3 minus 6, 7 minus 14, and so on. This, of course, for those who know, is just an instance of the following famous theorem by Gauss of 1828. If p is a squared plus b squared, we choose the sign of a such that a is congruent to 1 mod 4, then this binomial coefficient is congruent to 2a. There are several different proofs unknown. Some use Jakobsthal sums. I don't want to go into details about that, but Jakobsthal sums are sums over certain Legendre symbols. And in order to extend this to congruence modulo p squared, we need the Fermat quotient, and the Fermat quotient is defined as this quotient. Of course, the numerator is divisible by p by Fermat's little theorem, so we divide by p and we get an integer, and that is called the Fermat quotient to base m. Now, Boyckers in 1984 conjectured the following result, and that was a couple of years later proven by Chola, Dwork, and Evans. If p and a are as before, then this binomial coefficient has this, or is congruent to this expression. And of course, if you see, if you reduce it to modulo p, this disappears, and also this disappears, and you get Gauss's result back. And there is an interesting application of that. Some 10 years ago, I was involved with a large-scale search of Wilson primes. Wilson primes are those for which this Wilson congruence holds modulo p squared. Three of them are known, namely 5, 13, and 561. And no others are known up to 500 million. And
Did you say 561?
561 cannot be true because it's divisible by 3. 560 something. Does anyone know? Well, around that type, but no, 561 definitely not. It is not very easy to compute binomial coefficients. There is a theorem of Morley that is a congruence modulo p squared of p minus 1, choose p minus 1 over 2. And then if that is combined with this congruence modulo p squared, the computations, at least for the case where p is congruent to 1 mod 4, can be reduced to p minus 1 over 4 factorial, which computationally is a huge savings. So that is one practical application. The question we asked ourselves was, can this congruence be extended modulo p cubed? And that will be the main topic of this talk. And first, an interlude. Let's go back to Wilson's theorem. P minus 1 factorial is congruent to minus 1 modulo P. We now define what we call the Gauss factorial, which is the product of all integers that are relatively prime to a given integer n. And using this notation, here is another theorem of Gauss, which is a direct generalization of Wilson's theorem, namely the product of all integers up to n that are relatively prime to n, or up to n minus 1, is minus 1 for these integers and plus 1 otherwise. And of course, you will recognize that these integers are exactly those that have a primitive root modulo n. And for that reason, we call this product Gauss factorials, just to have a name. Here, let me write out, spelled out, Gauss's theorem again. And the question now is, can we have something like this for p squared in place of p, and using Gauss factorials instead of the regular factorial? And it turns out, yes. And the idea here is we use the theorem by Chawla and others. And the main technical device is to link up this Gauss factorial with the regular factorial. And then, of course, we get other factors as well. This is a relatively elementary computation. One has to group the factors properly, and then it will work out. And we can derive a very similar congruence for p squared minus 1 over 4, the Gauss factorial modulo p squared. And if we put that together, oh yes, and also we have to take care of that sum. Remember, on the previous slide, that sum we have to take care of. That is a very well-known sum that goes back to Emma Lehmer, and other sums have been known before, for instance, by Glaser and so on. So if we put these together, simplify, then we have this quotient, which resembles a binomial coefficient, but of course it is not a binomial coefficient because here we have the Gauss factorial, but here we have the actual binomial coefficient, and we have this denominator. And if you recall the theorem by Chawla, Dwork, and Evans, you will see that this factor occurred there as well. In other words, this factor will be factored out. And so putting everything together, we have this determination modulo p squared of our quotient of Gauss factorials. And what makes this useful and nice is we only have these simple terms without that other term involving the Fermat quotient that occurs in the theorem by Chawla and others. So the point here is, and that's an important point, it would be quite hopeless to conjecture an extension of the theorem of Shaula and others. But here, with a simpler case, one could easily, or relatively easily, guess how this might continue modulo p cubed. And this is where the experimentation came in. We found this, at first conjecturally. And that's not so difficult to do, because all we have to do, we know that these terms have to be there, so we put them on the left-hand side, we divide by p squared, and then make a guess about the a here. Well, here we have a to the first power, a to the power minus 1, well, a good guess would be a to the power minus 3. And that was already the case. And then here we have 2. To get there, we divide by 4. To get there, we divide by 4 again. So not too difficult a guess to make. Only at first we guessed that this might be a plus. It turned out to be a minus. So without too much effort, we came up with this. But to prove that was a different story, and it took us a while to come up with a proof. Now, we go backwards. Suppose that this is true, then we use known congruences and go in the other direction and obtain this result. And this is our main result. Of course, conditional on the truth of this theorem 5. So we have this, and the new factor is this. What is E? P minus 3. That's the Euler number defined by this a generating function. So once again, what is new here is this term, P squared over A. 8a cubed, and this. So the question remains, how can we prove theorem 5? And here is an instance of what sometimes we face in mathematics. Sometimes it is easier to prove a general result than it is to prove a special case. And that turned out to be the case. So, now let me go back to this. The question now is, we have such a nice result, at least conjecturally, what is the extension modulo p fourth? Right? So in the spirit of experimentation, what we do is put a 4 here, put a power 4 here, put this on the other side, divide everything by p cubed, and see what we get on the right-hand side. And one can conjecture, well, a minus 1, a to the power minus 3, so it would be a to the power minus 5. Here, 2 divided by 4. Here, we might divide by 4 again. And so let's see what we get. And it was a little bit of a surprise that we don't just get divided by 4 again, but we get a 2 here. We had expected a 1, simply. And then the next step, of course, once we are on a roll, you can do that over and over again. You get a 5 here. And then you get a 14 here. And then the aha sets in. Sequence 1, 1, 2, 5, 14. That sounds very familiar. And either one knows about it, and I don't know what was the case in our case, but in any case, we have this wonderful online encyclopedia of integer sequences by Sloan, which immediately tells you that these are the Catalan numbers. Okay. And that's why I wrote C alpha minus 2, and this is the general form. Now, once you have conjectured something like that, and especially if special sort of numbers come in, then it's so much easier to try to prove something because you have something to latch onto. You know these central binomial coefficients somehow have to occur, and then one can, of course, ask yourself, where do these central binomial coefficients come from? And so obviously, Theorem 5 is a special case of Theorem 7, so if we can prove this general case, then we have, then we're done. So what are the main ingredients of the proof? First of all, the Jacobi sum. So the Jacobi sum, depending on two characters, modulo p is defined like this. Then we fix a primitive root, g modulo p, and given this primitive root, we choose the character chi that is such that chi of g is I. And then we define integers a prime, b prime in this way. By the way, this is all a well-developed theory. That's not our work. Then we define integers a prime and b prime that satisfy this property. And of course, they are closely related to the integers a and b that occur in Gauss's theorem, or at least the a up to sine. And so these are uniquely defined. And then we use the fact, or this evaluation that's also well known in the theorem, in the theory of Gauss and Jacobi sums. On the other hand, now here we use some very deep theorems. This is congruent to 0 mod p, and chi cubed is related to the p-adic gamma function, and that comes from the so-called Gross-Koblitz formula. All this can be found in this wonderful book by Berndt, Evans, and Williams called Gauss and Jacobi sums. And so what is the p-adic gamma function? It is defined by, first of all, we define this product, which is, as you see, very closely related to what we call the Gauss factorials. And then it is the p-adic limit of these products. And then here is the main computation. We have, on the one hand, we have this evaluation. On the other hand, the evaluation using the p-adic gamma function. It is clear why I wrote it as 1 minus 1 half and 1 minus 1 quarter, because modulo p to the alpha, I have this. And this is then equal to these products that are used to define the p-adic gamma function. And these products then, as I pointed out, are very closely related to our Gauss factorials. And here we are. So this is the quotient that resembles the binomial coefficient, this quotient that defines the what we are after. Now, what we do is we raise this this congruence to the power alpha, which we can do because we have a zero on the right-hand side. So we get this. Then we expand the left-hand side. That's where the binomial coefficients come in. Then we separate real and imaginary parts, so it gets a little bit more complicated. And then we use this combinatorial identity that is required. And here you see already the central binomial coefficient. And if you put everything together, it's not quite that easy, but it's more or less straightforward. If you put everything together, then we obtain our theorem 7. And now everything worked so well for those Gauss, for that theorem of Gauss. There is an analogous theorem by Jacobi, namely, if P is congruent to 1 mod 3, and therefore also 1 mod 6, then we can write 4P as R squared plus 3S squared, and this uniquely determines R if we require R to be 1 modulo 3. And then less than 10 years after Gauss, Jacobi proved that then this binomial coefficient is congruent to minus R. So you will recognize that this is in complete analogy to Gauss's theorem. This also was generalized to modulo P squared independently by Evans, who never published his result, and by Jung in 1989. And the generalization looks like this. It is of an easier form because there is no such second factor as the one that involved the Fermat quotient. So going through our engine, once we knew what to look for, it was fairly straightforward then to generalize that modulo P cubed. And so here you see we have the additional term P squared over R cubed. And on the right-hand side, we have also a P squared term, this time involving the Bernoulli polynomial evaluated at 1/3, which in a way is related to the Euler number that occurred earlier on. And that is all I wanted to tell you today, and I thank you very much for your attention.